The highest motive gives you the greatest motivation. And I think that is attributed to marketing and fundraising. If the goal is just to get them to click or to get them to give, it's a little short-sighted. If it's to actually help them accomplish what they want to see in life or what they want to do in the world, you're going to end up helping them and raising a ton more money in the process.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I'm your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Evan Cox. He is the principal, not of a school, but of Evan Cox Consulting. He helps nonprofits and cause-driven brands market and fund the work they believe in. That's it. That's the whole bio. It's perfect. And I think he's going to get a gold star for world's most concise and impactful bio. Welcome to the show, Evan.
Thanks, Kenny. Glad to be here. And I'm glad to give you a short bio because oftentimes it's a run-on sentence that goes for multiple paragraphs.
Right. It usually is like, he was born on a cold and dreary night. And it's like, I don't need all that. Hard stop. But, you know, sometimes I'll read it and I punch it up a little bit. But I'm excited to have this conversation with you. Our first one, which was not recorded, it's not for public eyes, was a lot of fun. So I have every reason to believe that this one will be equally as fun and valuable. So tell me, Evan, what is on your mind?
Well, actually, our first conversation, you were live at a Panera because weren't you trying to avoid nap time? If I remember correctly, you're trying to avoid waking a sleeping child or something like that, right?
Well, it makes it sound more like I was fighting nap time.
The way that you threw.
I was. That's why I went to Panera, got some coffee, and I won the battle over nap time. Yes, my 2-year-old sleeps nearby, and if I wake him up, then my wife gets involved. And if I'm the reason he didn't take a full nap, then I may not get to record again and nobody will find the body.
Yeah, I feel that. I'm in the basement, but with my kids upstairs, it doesn't take much noise for that to somehow go downstairs. Like before school, there's a couple hours where I just know it's a little more hectic upstairs. So like I have to plan accordingly.
Tiny elephants.
That's exactly right.
So, yeah, I need to, that's why if people see me at the Panera, just know I'm either avoiding waking a child or I am fighting my own personal nap time. So,
or maybe both.
Maybe a little bit of both. So what have you been thinking about lately, Evan? What's been consuming your thoughts?
I think it's probably a continuation of what we ended up talking about actually over that meeting, which was this idea in working with so many nonprofits and cause-based brands, even in the last few weeks, there's this like subtle idea of like fundraising is icky, or I don't like this idea because asking for money is like either foreign or it comes with these like money triggers from either past experience or like your salary's tied up into it. Yeah. This idea that either fundraising or even marketing has this like means to an end approach. And really what I really want any nonprofit or cause-based brand to realize is that marketing or fundraising when done right is an act of service on behalf of your end audience. Now it has to be done right. It can't be sleazy, but if you have the right approach and framework, it can actually be an act of service for a church or a faith-based nonprofit, an act of ministry even. There can be something there that allows you to take this from the art of asking for more money into building authentic relationships that actually serve the audience of donors and the people that you're ultimately trying to serve as well, if you have more than one audience.
There's a lot there to unpack. My brain's gone in a couple different directions. Number one, I don't think anybody listening would disagree with you, which is, you know, it's great. It's like, okay, it's a blinding flash of the obvious as, a coach of mine in a training session would say, and I was like, okay, yeah, it's like, you know, when those happen, then it's like, okay, there's some intuitive truth there. But I think when people hear that, they agree with it. They said, yes, that is the best way to go about it. Now, maybe you have a unique take, and I do think that that's different because people just want anti-sleazy, but I think you took it a step further when you say it's an actual act of service, act of ministry. It's benevolent, altruistic even, when done right. So the two things I'd love for you to break down a little bit are, one, how do you talk about taking it a step further instead of just not being icky, right? Yeah. But actually pursuing it as an act of service. And two, people may agree with you, but they're saying, well, yeah, that's great, but it always sounds that way. It always feels that way. I don't really know, like, well, how do you even go about changing that?
Yeah. I don't know that I have all of the best practices finalized because it's always evolving, but I think a couple of stories might illustrate when you're in the right zone versus when you're not. When I started doing the work of marketing and fundraising, I was working for a large nonprofit. I had sat in every seat at the table internally outside of finance and HR. I was even the outside landscaper for a season, right? Like I picked weeds and I mowed the grass. A different story for a different time. But marketing and fundraising were two of these things that if you only asked for money when talking with donors, it became a one-sided relationship. And a relationship solely based on money is transactional, not transformative. Mm. And so oftentimes what I would do is I would begin establishing a relationship with a donor, not with the intent to get more money from them, but just to like thank them because maybe they're an existing donor. Like, you've given for X number of years. Do you realize what that's tallied up to and what we've been able to accomplish? Mm-hmm. And then also what that quickly turned into is we did a variety of different programs, humanitarian work. People were calling me on Saturday night when a California wildfire was in their area and they owned horses. My sister is actually on the U.S. equestrian team, right? So we had a bond over horses.
Wow.
And so like, she was like, please pray not just for us, but this wildfire is coming and we don't know what we're going to do with our horses. Hmm. And so our relationship extended beyond the fact that they gave and transformed into like us actually praying for them. Now that's a faith-based context, right? It's not true for everybody. But in that scenario, like, we were able to talk through a crisis in their moment that transcended money. And what did they end up doing? About a month later, they gave to our disaster relief program because we were there in their time of need during the disaster. That is where you can start to move beyond just this transactional and start to be transformative. Or one other example, I thought through a couple, a high net worth individual oftentimes does not have the community because they're the CEO or they're the largest giver in their church, or they don't have people who realize like with this constraints of what it looks like to be in their scenario. And so they didn't have much of a network around them. Well, somebody on our team was walking through the loss of a loved one. And I vividly remember them telling us the story because they got off the call. And this high net worth individual said, I'm getting ready to lose my husband. Like, he's in the final stages of hospice. And I've never gone through this before. And what our team member said, well, I have. I'm actually a pastor of 20 years. I'm driving now. I will meet you in Nashville. We're in St. Louis, 4 hours away. Mm-hmm. I will be there this weekend and we're going to walk through this together.
Wow.
Now, not everybody can do that. You can't drop everything and drive 4 hours away. It has to be the right moment with an established relationship. But the principle of it is nonprofit fundraising or marketing when done right moves from transactional asking for money and you're walking with people, building trust and relationships. And that takes time and effort.
Mm-hmm. Right. I love those stories, and a lot of times it is easier to pull from a story and illustration and in gaining new understanding. I was curious in telling that, you know, someone says, great, those are some great moments. But I'm thinking of the marketer, maybe the fundraiser, the person listening, and they're like, okay, cool, I'll be on the lookout for if our donors are in crisis, show my humanity and find a way to meet their need. but I'm working on our end of year giving campaign. I'm working on a new capital campaign, or we have our very large event, our annual event, our gala. I don't know what the right pronunciation is. No one can tell me.
There is no right pronunciation. It's all relative.
It's all gibberish. It's all stuff where you get fancy. So you may have your fancy pants party, a fundraising party. How about that?
There you go.
Yeah, you get t-shirt, but then you have fancy pants. There's an event. You're free to take that. No trademark infringement. But they have those sort of things, the normal things of life and mm-hmm. fundraising and nonprofits coming up. How do they translate those sort of stories of transformation over transaction, relationship over just requests? How do those things translate into those moments where maybe you're not being presented with that opportunity and you're instead just writing marketing copy and designing social media graphics or a booklet or banners?
Yeah. Oh, gosh, that is a great question, because sometimes we're so heads down in the daily to-do list or the things we have to do that it's hard to find the purpose either in those moments or figure out, like, how do you actually get to that story we talked about? I don't have all the answers, but a few things that come to mind is if you've got an event coming up or an end of your campaign, some big project, you can't magically expect people to get excited to give the mm-hmm. moment you send out your mailer and have that ad campaign, just because now is your time to tell them your story.
Mm-hmm.
If you prime the pump with relationship beforehand, it means that you've got an end of year campaign happening October, November, December. But maybe throughout the entire year, you're establishing relationship with people that goes beyond the money, so that when it comes time for that thing, you aren't just relying on, I hope you got the brochure. You can actually pick up the phone and say, Jerry, first of all, I hope your goldfish is okay. But secondly, you're getting something in the mail from me. I want you to be able to see it. Let me know when you have some rapport that actually primes the pump a little bit and isn't just like, oh, that organization sending out that end of year thing that I'm getting 30 of from all the groups. Like, I've got four catalogs to buy cattle and I don't know who to pick from. Right.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. So this is overly simplistic, but you invest in the relationship, say not for 9 months, so that during that 3 month, marketing campaign for giving or event attendance where you're going to be asking for money. So it sort of supercharges that, and it can help you stand out. Like you said, is oftentimes large corporations, high net worth individuals, they're being hit up left and right. They're on somebody's list, right? To say, oh, we got to go ask them. We got to go ask if you're going to be doing a campaign and you want it to go well, you need to go talk to this family and that family and these people. Okay. Right. But doing the legwork on the front end is how, when you send out your mailer amongst all the others, that yours may be the one at the top of the pile or the one that actually gets picked up and looked at and say, you know what, there's three other events going on that weekend. We're going to attend theirs.
And here's the tricky part. It all comes down to motive. Because if you take that approach, you mm-hmm. can do that with the motive, even if it's subconscious, of I'm priming the pump so that when it's time to ask, they're going to give. Or you can also have the motive of I want to establish a long-term relationship just to serve someone, to give them the update, to give them this, so that the ask is actually a part of a full, robust relationship. And if they can't give now, maybe they'll be compelled to give later because something else will tug at their heartstrings, or this has been a hard, So that piece, and actually a mentor of mine once said, the highest motive gives you the greatest motivation. And I think that is attributed to marketing and fundraising. If the goal is just to get them to click or to get them to give, it's a little short-sighted. If it's to actually help them accomplish what they want to see in life or what they want to do in the world, you're going to end up helping them and raising a ton more money in the process.
That's really good. I love that. But I think what you're articulating, and I don't like to use the term the devil's advocate. I think he's got enough, is that sounds great, Evan, but how analyzing my motives, that's deep work, or it feels like a waste of time, or, well, now you're getting at how I show up as a person, right? I tuned into this to just get some really cool fundraising tips.
Yeah.
But now you're telling me I really need to look at who I am as a human coming into this, because I think the most simple end definition of what you described of giving to get, that's manipulation.
That's right.
Right? You can say, well, it's a transaction. Cool. And there is a transaction that happens, but giving, I'm going to give you attention so that I can get the thing I want from you. That's the most basic definition of manipulation. And I think that's the biggest, and at least in my experience, and I'd be curious of yours, is the biggest turnoff for donors, whether they've never given or they've given before, is when they feel like they're being manipulated out of their resources so that they become yours.
100%. Yeah. It's not stealing, but it has some connotations of that, doesn't it? Like, it has some of those feelings. And the other thing that we talked about, actually, was it over a supercharged lemonade or did you have coffee up in here? I can't remember.
I had coffee. They've gotten rid of the lemonades because of the lawsuits. So,
but there was a lot of caffeine involved for me and for you.
Right.
But one of the things that we talked about there is I think nonprofits accidentally cut their impact in half doing the very thing that we're talking about here. And this is where we get to the practical part. If my donors are a means to get funds to help somebody else, like let's take a water charity, for example, water organization. I've got people that need clean water in Africa or Asia. And so donors are helping this group get clean water. That is a fantastic mission. I love that. I've seen the impact firsthand of water wells that are like, it's amazing. But the reality is you cut your impact in half when you're using one group to help another group. The reality is if you can actually have your cause be equally two groups at once, the people who donate and give or volunteer, whoever's actively helping, and the people who get clean water or visit your food pantry or whatever, if you have both of those as I'm going to help two groups of people transform, what it does is it doubles your impact. Because most people expect the only stats I can ever put on my annual report are this many people got clean water. But what if you said in your annual report, we helped 500 donors have a life-changing understanding of the impact of clean water. And like you actually, like you built stats around that and you had the ability to showcase my audience isn't just the people in the end who get something, but it's also like, that means that the email you send out shouldn't be, do you want to give to this? It should maybe sometimes be, how are things? That's one of my favorite emails to use to start relationships with your donors. Subject line, how are things? Question mark. It's an open-ended question to check in on them that oftentimes leads to a great conversation around what they could give towards, but isn't automatically assuming I'm only reaching out for money. That's a great Kickstarter to actually care about the person. But at the same time, you get back to what you mentioned, which is tactical marketing. I have a campaign that has to go out the door, which by the way, all of this relationship stuff should not negate the fact that you still have deadlines to meet, because an end of year campaign in February is not going to produce well either way. Like you still got to do the basics there too.
Right. That's really good is thinking, hey, I don't, just the process, I don't want to say relationship or even maybe the transaction, but maybe I'll just say the process doesn't with donors, whether individual or foundation or corporate, however that's organized, the giving entity doesn't end when the you know, you get a email saying transaction completed, here's the receipt. Is really thinking about what is that person's experience is creating equal experiences. Now, experiences on the other side, those are called programs, right? Like we got program management, program development, we have program outcomes.
Yeah.
We have all these things. And oftentimes we are focused on that one. That's probably what started us in the work, is we saw a need that needed to be met, that needed to be met through, you know, basically giving away a type of service or product or something, right? But we need to think about how, if we're helping these people make good on, say, they have a life goal or purpose or a core value of, and not just of philanthropy, but maybe there is a connection with the work for clean water, right? Like maybe they have strong feelings towards basic human health needs, and that aligns with them. Now, yes, you should align with that in terms of the best donors are those that are philosophically and values-wise aligned with your organization and your work. But what do they get in exchange from that beyond a photograph and a simple report? And maybe they can't give up their time, but you could still do something, is what I hear you saying. Of how do you help them not just give money and receive maybe the warm tinglies and the tax deduction, but
yeah,
did they receive an experience that benefits and blesses their life maybe as much as the people who needed the financial resources that person provided? Am I misinterpreting something here?
No, I think you're spot on. And think about everybody. Everybody's got a passion, right? Like everybody's got some sort of hobby or passion. Oftentimes for somebody, and let's just use example of like a high net worth individual. Sometimes when business is going well or they've got this income, a philanthropy arm of their life becomes this hobby or passion. They get educated. Mm-hmm. They get started from the ground up because they didn't know about it before. I've been to a couple of events where I could tell the thing that drove their life in terms of excitement was like family and friends. And then the fact that they actually were like a leading change agent in this specific program. Like they were like galvanizing their friends and family because their family had no idea. We're using clean water again. Had no idea of the stats of clean water. And they were like, I get to kind of be a connector. Like everybody loves to be a connector, right? Like this person needs to know this person. Like that's how we got connected, right?
Right.
Like that's how things go. But if you can find out what they value and what they care about, then you're right. The report is negligible. Like the report is maybe part of a piece, but what they actually get is an ongoing relationship and connection to, I am driving that mission forward, or I'm playing my part. Or it could also be, I'm playing my part and I'm doing it in a way that gets me the best tax deduction, or I want to use a DAF, or like some people really care about that. Some people don't.
Sure.
But that could be a piece that people really care about.
Yeah, because it could speak to, you know, financial stewardship or whatever their other goals may be. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know if we talked about this in our previous conversations, but, you know, Building a Story Brand by Donald Miller, you know, great book. Most people now have come across, you know, Story Brand, Brand Script, things like that. I used to, when I ran my agency, I would run companies through the process of, let's create a brand script, let's tell the story of your organization. And the very after we got past, you know, what's the transformation that you think for anybody who uses your services, they're going to go from blank to blank. Once we got past that, then we needed to start talking about their ideal customer or client and what did they want. And in his book, you know, Don Miller goes into, I think, 7 different categories of desires. And it could be the accumulation of resources. It could be the efficiency of resources. One of them, though, and I don't know if they split this, but it was like the desire for meaning and also legacy is, when I'm dead and gone, how will I be remembered? What is the dent in the universe I'm going to be known for, even if it's just to that friends and family group? Is, I may not need the world to think of me this way, but I would like the people in my world to think of me this way.
That's right.
And do you find that when those of us who may be on the marketing fundraising side of things, that trying to understand that aspect of somebody's motivation can be helpful. So long as our motivation is for the highest good, right? It's in a pure altruistic place, not manipulation. But in understanding that aspect of that person's motivation for giving, is that what you lean into or recommend in terms of just building a powerful relationship?
Yeah. And I love that book. I'm actually certified. I think we talked about that in the StoryBrand framework.
Yeah.
And for me, every campaign or conversation should start with solving a problem. And here's what a lot of nonprofits get wrong is, let's go back to that clean water example. The problem to solve is not necessarily that X number of people in this village don't have clean water. That's not always the problem to solve. Now, that's a part of
it's an external part,
it's
right?
It's an external part, but if you're speaking to a donor, the problem could also be legacy, make a difference, you can play a part. Is this relevant to you? Because the reality is, if you've got two audiences, the people in Africa who need clean water, what they need, the problem at hand to be solved is, I actually need a cup of water. But how silly is it us for think of like a donor, especially a high net worth individual, they walk to somewhere in their room and they've got four or five different access points to clean water. They don't need clean water. Mm-hmm. They need a relevant, tangible reason why they should give to that specific cause and why that will solve a problem for them. And it might be altruistic. They might just care about the cause, but it has to often be framed as, this is you doing your part so that you can blank. There has to be a piece in there that resonates with what the donor wants, not just what the end result is of the problem that's solved in maybe a country 3,000 miles away.
Mm-hmm. What happens to campaigns, fundraising directors, marketing directors, if they don't think about that? What's the downside? I know we could get super simplistic, but being that you have the experience and insight and that you do from your own practical time served there, and now as a consultant, what's the, you know, at worst it's unproductive in what way? At best it's unproductive. At worst, it's what's the damage done by operating against the manner in which you're talking about?
Oh, I love that question. That is one of the things that probably connects my work with your work and building communities and team and culture so much, is because one of the things that it does is it can make it terribly inefficient to write, copy, or produce a campaign or get something, because you're struggling or grasping to figure out what's the problem or the reason why we're reaching out. Yes, it's end of year, but let's go beyond the time of year. Why are we sending this out now? And then when you get to team and culture, if your team isn't aligned around a problem or doesn't have a framework or a plan to get to that point, then not only is your team going to spin their wheels and maybe have lack of alignment, which is where you come in, but like, oh my gosh, you're going to end up not resonating. Even if you get it out the door, if you don't pick the right problem to solve, the person reading it might think, oh, that was a well-written letter. Or I'm glad that they're doing it. But if it isn't done the right way, it might not tug internally at them to say, now I'm going to put pen to paper or swipe the card or do X to do my part in making this happen.
Yeah, it's that. Oh, that's nice. But what does that have to do with me?
Yeah.
And I would think even on a thing that could happen at the same time is, if you're not clear on that, in particular, if you are a leader, which this is a podcast for leaders, right? So probably not looking at the marketing intern, although certainly we welcome you, intern.
I was once the intern.
We all were interns, gophers, you know, whatever, go for this, go for that. But I think about these campaign managers, these directors of development and what have you, is if they don't connect with it's almost like a product market fit, right? Like if you're solving a problem no one cares enough about to give money to, you may end up costing a member of your team their job because you didn't generate enough dollars to keep them on board. You may lose your own job.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's a very real downside, which if you're someone who accepted this position, not just because you needed the job and a paycheck, right, but you actually cared about the cause. We'll just keep going to our clean water example. But you really are passionate about clean water. You wanted to apply the skills and abilities that you've cultivated, you have, or God gave you, however you believe about that, in service to getting people clean water. But you didn't do the work, or you didn't connect enough with the issue and the donors and the people. You got myopic, you got transactional. You have actually hurt the cause. You may have hurt future development dollars going here, because, you know, as of this recording, tomorrow I'll be at a summit in Fort Worth. And Dan Pilota, who wrote the book and created the movie Uncharitable, he talks about the problem with people giving towards the administrative arms, the infrastructure of organizations. Nonprofits are scrutinized unlike so many other organizations, right? How are you utilizing our dollars that we're giving you? And if it looks like just a ton of turnover and he can't keep people,
yeah,
not only have you hurt people's jobs, but you may have hurt the cause itself, which is a risk that our for-profits, brothers and sisters, don't necessarily have to deal with.
Yeah. And I think the other piece in that conversation too is, if you don't have a relevant reason for them to give now, you can't then say in a boardroom meeting or in a one-off debrief after a campaign, well, our donors are just fatigued, or they no longer want to give. There's lots of reasons if you don't have tangible data that you can kind of like cast it aside. And some of that may be the case. If you set an appeal for 30 days straight, you're probably going to have a little bit of donor fatigue, right? Like if they're getting things 30 days straight, there might be some fatigue. But the reality is there needs to be an urgent, logical reason that someone should take their hard-earned money and give to you right now. In that water example, it might be, and this is a true story, when we were doing clean water work, and it's still happening today in that nonprofit, one of the reasons why they were doing water wells is because it was women who were forced to go walk for water, which meant they were unsafe, often taken advantage of, and there were crocodiles in the river, right? And so like people actually lost their life every time that a well wasn't drilled. Wow. It wasn't hyperbole. It wasn't an extra piece in there. It was a logical thing that we can say, like, listen, the whole card, the cold hard facts are this happened when we don't do this work. And there's some level of like, oh, now I understand that if I don't play my part, it's not manipulation, but like there is a real outcome.
Which is, it seems simple, but isn't that what nonprofit work is supposed to do anyways?
Yeah.
Right? Progress, not activity.
Yep.
Like that's, if we don't give now, then these bad things happen. We're trying to intervene in a negative thing happen. We're trying to do good in the world, but we have to do well in order to do good.
Exactly. Yeah, that's well said.
So if somebody is listening to this and saying, look, okay, so we've got to cultivate relationships. We want transformation, not transactions. We need to reach out. We need to have good motivations, and this is going to help and supercharge all the efforts that we have. That could sound really overwhelming. That sounds like a big thing, right? Yeah. Because it's not this little tactical, like if you do A and then B and then C, then you magically get lots of money,
right?
And that's the tough part, right? Like fundraising would be easy if it weren't for all these people. So if somebody though says, I would love to be that kind of development officer, fundraiser, marketer, what have you, What's a great first step, a baby step someone could take in the next 24 hours, spending little to no money on this, to take a next step or a first step towards becoming more like what you've described here?
That's a great question. Let's think first about that mid to larger size nonprofit where there might be multiple team members. There might be somebody who's responsible for this. And let's say that you have a day-to-day role that just has you heads down working on that campaign.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I found super helpful was to actually look ahead to a time where I wasn't as busy. Maybe it's 3 weeks from now, and say, I'm going to put a time block on the calendar for 1 hour. In that 1 hour, I'm just going to call 4 to 5 donors to check in, get their feedback, see how they're doing, and then also see how much they know about what we're doing. Not only is it a good ability to start relationships, mm-hmm. but also it can tell you, is your perception of what you're doing and how you're going about your business their perception of what's happened? Like, it is a hard data gathering exercise that also builds relationship. Find a time when you're not as busy, or like make time for it. It can only be an hour. That's fine. But if you are not regularly talking with your donors, that's step one. Like, regardless mm-hmm. of what your role is, you could be the admin. Set aside time, find out which donors to talk to. Maybe you have a CRM. Call mm-hmm. a few of them. Email a couple of them. Start a conversation. It's going to pay big dividends. So that'd be one very practical example.
Yeah, I love that. And I know some people may go, oh man, I got to call. I got to say these things. Like, you're not pitching.
Yeah.
You're just asking questions, which honestly takes a lot of the pressure off of you. So it's not a, hey, I'm going to go and drum up 5 new things. It's like, you're just going to talk to people who have already bought into your mission. You're just going to ask them some questions, take some notes. And oftentimes that's what, you know, when people feel heard, they feel valued. And ultimately, I think a lot of the donors, they want to make sure like their dollars are doing what they're promised that they're going to do,
mm-hmm.
but they also want to know that they are a valuable part of the mission, that they're not being used. And so I think that has a lot of great benefits. So I hope if you're listening and you're in that role and in that position, that you block that time tomorrow, next week, 3 weeks, next month. And it's real easy to get on a whatever calendar, Google, or God help you if you're using Microsoft. I'm biased.
It might be too far gone for anybody using an Office product. We might just need to exclude.
You might just shut the doors, start it over. But put a recurring thing on there, monthly, quarterly, you know, whatever makes the most sense,
mm-hmm.
and start doing that as a regular practice. So I love that, Evan. If somebody wanted to know more about you, about your consultancy, your work, or just the wisdom that you're dropping on a regular basis, where would you send them?
Oh, I appreciate you asking. So if you go to evancoxconsulting.com/resources, mm-hmm. you're going to see a variety of things you can download for free or ways to engage both me and the team. We specialize in marketing and fundraising. Mm-hmm. And unlike a number of other agencies out there, which are probably doing great work, we try to batch how we approach our work in a way that meets anybody's budget. So there can be a DIY template that you mm-hmm. can get for free or a low cost if you're willing to put in the elbow grease, mm-hmm. all the way up to us doing a website or a campaign for that organization that needs the expertise but doesn't have the time to implement it. And there's a ton of free things. There's even an annual report template that we just loaded up in there that you can get for free and that you can knock out in one afternoon. We tested it. We actually time tested it. In one afternoon, you can build your annual report for your organization absolutely free. It's drag and drop in Canva, put your photos, put your stories in there, and you're off to the races.
I've got a board meeting this evening. I may go download it and bring that up for us.
Absolutely do it.
Awesome. Well, Evan, thank you so much for being a guest. I look forward to further conversations. I'm convinced this won't be the last time that you're a guest and dropping some knowledge on us. Thank you to you, the listener. Listeners, I say listener, I'm told that you're supposed to address it as though you're speaking just to one person. So there you go. Now you're addressed. Feel seen, feel heard, feel loved today. But if you enjoyed this, if you got value out of this or any of the other episodes, I would deeply appreciate a like, a rate, a review, a subscribe, or whatever the button is on the platform you consume this on. Because number one, it gives me some feedback and lets me know, hey, these things are good, these things not so good. Because at the end of the day, I'm here to create value for you. Yes, I enjoy doing this, but it's not worth my time if I'm not making it worth your time. And also, you never know who needs to hear this particular conversation, and you giving it a little bit more love and attention may put it in their path and unlock their next step in leadership. And that's a free and easy way for you to pay it forward. But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.